part of our lesson is going to be in 1 Kings chapter 10, if you're going to open your Bibles there. 1 Kings chapter 10, glad you're here. Certainly got a good number here. You never know on mornings because of work schedules and the like. You never know who's going to be able to be there and who's not, but we're certainly glad there's such a good number here. Got Bishop's with us, Joey Rankin with us. What a joy to see him walk in the room. I know many of you know him from years ago, but it's so nice to be with you. We've been studying about things that we have to overcome in our life in order to stay faithful and to remain faithful. But that is not what we're going to do in our morning lessons. Understanding that there's not going to be everybody able to be here. We don't want anyone to miss out on some of those things. So what we're going to do in our morning lessons is just have just a study of various things. Today, we're going to be talking, as Brad's already mentioned, about our King of Kings. And we're going to do that by making some applications about an event that happened back when Brad was doing his drill class for some of the younger ones here during the United Kingdom. Saul, David, Solomon. During the life of Solomon, the Queen of Sheba makes a long journey to come and visit him. We don't exactly know historically. We can't be dogmatic about where Sheba was. The New Testament calls it a long journey. We'll read about that in just a moment. The best guess, what seems to be the best logical research on that, is it's probably in and around the area that we would today call Ethiopia. And if you can kind of picture that in your mind, but that's the journey that she made. Word had spread about Solomon, and she's just got to check it out. Look in 1 Kings chapter 10, and look in verse 1. The Queen of Sheba, verse 1, had heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, and she came to test him. She came to prove him. And now think about that. Judea, and if historical records are even close, if our geography study is even close, if we are somewhere down in the Ethiopian area, the Chad area, that's a long way. But word has spread that far about a king named Solomon, who none of them would have ever seen. They've certainly never met him. This is not firsthand information. This is before you could Skype somebody, and this is before you could shoot somebody a text. Think about the distance, and think about how far word has spread about Solomon. And when she hears these stories, we've all heard stories before. Somebody tells us something, and we just think to ourselves, I don't know about that. Well, she don't know about that. She's heard it, and the stories were just mind-blowing. And she says, I don't know. I don't know if I can trust what I've been hearing. And that last phrase there, she came to test him. She came to prove him. She came to find out if what she has heard is true. So let's look at what happened when she came. The first thing that happened was she recognized his wisdom. His wisdom stands out like nothing she has ever experienced. Go back to chapter 3. Let's take the time and remind ourselves about Solomon's wisdom, where it came from and what it contained. Not long after David died, through a vision, through a dream, God basically comes to Solomon and says, what do you want? I'll give you what you want. Tell me what I can do for you, to paraphrase it. Could you imagine some of the things today that people would want? Gold, riches, fame, long life, etc. Think about some of the things we might ask. What Solomon did, I'm paraphrasing, but what Solomon basically said was, I'm overwhelmed at this work that I have. I'm overwhelmed at the role that I feel. I am the king over your people, and I feel so unworthy. And he basically asked for wisdom to rule well. Wisdom to make proper judges and judgments and decisions. And God's so pleased with that. He said, because you didn't ask for these other things, I'll give you them too. I'll give you the gold. I'll give you the fame. If you're faithful, I'll give you the long life. But in verse 12 of chapter 3, it says, I have done according to your words.
I have given you a wise and an understanding heart, so that there will be none like before you, and there will none come after you. He's going to have a wisdom that was unparalleled to any others. What he's got, he has been gifted with wisdom from above. Here's an example of it. Turn over a page to chapter 4. It would be nice, I'll just confess, it'd be nice if we had a little bit more specific information about it, but we've got enough that we can figure some things out. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 32. Speaking about Solomon and the things that he did with his wisdom and what he could do. He spoke 3,000 proproverbs. He wrote 1,005 songs. He spoke of trees, from the tree that's in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. He spoke of beasts, of fowl, of creeping things, of fishes. There came people all over to hear the wisdom of Solomon. All the kings of the earth that heard about his wisdom. He has wisdom from above, and there were no holes in it. There were no limitations to it. Me and you all have some wisdom. We have wisdom from our experiences. We have wisdom from our studies, from our readings. We have wisdom that other people has taught us. But we've all got some holes in our wisdom. And it tends in a lot of ways. Our wisdom is going to be around, our little circle of life. The things we've experienced in our life, the things we enjoy and we read about. I can tell you Rod Carew's batting average in 1977. I'm going to guess most of you don't know who Rod Carew is. Exactly, that's my point. My head's full of a bunch of junk. I got a lot of knowledge about things that just don't matter. If somebody comes up to me and asks me about sowing, I'm going to have to sit on the reader. Somebody come and ask me something about how to handle dangerous chemicals, I'm sitting on the Ronnie. I don't know the answers to those things. Somebody comes and asks me about mechanics or wiring a house, I don't know those things. And you're just like me. You've got a wealth of knowledge and wisdom, and you've got even more that we don't know. Solomon had no holes. He's talking about trees in Lebanon. Make no mistake, Solomon doesn't live in Lebanon. How does he know about stuff up there? He's talking about creeping things that don't even exist in Judah. He's talking about fish that he's never seen because they're not a part of the Mediterranean or the Jordan River. How does he know these things? It's not from knowledge that he experienced. It's not from things he has read in the science books of the day. He knows these things because God has made him aware of them. And he is spouting it off. And he is spreading that knowledge and wisdom to all these people who come. And then they take it back to their kingdoms. And the word spread like crazy. So go back to chapter 10. And let's see what Sheba does, or the queen of Sheba. What does she do? He knows what's not possible to know from just living life and reading. No areas of ignorance. And if you look at the last phrase in verse 1, chapter 10, verse 1, she came to test him with hard questions. And she's like us. Could you imagine what me and you would be doing on that long journey, on that long caravan that she's traveling north with? Maybe she's even making a list, whether it was literally written down, but you know she's doing it mentally. She wants to know the answer to this. And she had heard a rumor about this, and she wants to ask about that. Whatever those hard questions were, she would have had a bunch of them. She's not making this long travel just to ask two questions. So she's got this long list in verse 1. Look at the last phrase in verse 2. She communed with him all that was in her heart. There are no secrets. She's just poor. I have this issue. I have this problem. I have this question. I have this concern. I want to know more about this. And she just lets it out. She opens up her heart. Look in verse 3. And Solomon told her all of her questions. There was not anything hidden from the king that he told her not. Whatever the questions were, he knew the answers to. And he answered every one of them. There was no riddle too complex for him. There was, unlike you and I, there was never a time he said this, he had to say, hang on, I'll get back with you later. Let me go call an expert. There was nothing he couldn't answer. And his wisdom and the greatness of that wisdom just blows her mind. It was awe-inspiring to her. I love the phrasing of it. Look in verse 4. Because apparently she stayed there a long while. You know, me and you are not going to go to Alaska for a six-hour vacation. We're not going to go that far and just stay there for one sunrise. She hung around. And while she was there, she took in the sights. And here's the sights, verse 4. When the Queen of Sheba had seen all of Solomon's wisdom and the house that he built and the meat at his table and the sitting of his servants and the attendance of his ministers and their apparel, and the cupbearers, and his ascent by which he went up to make the offerings at the temple of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. The old King James says there was no more spirit. Newer translations have changed that. There was no more breath in her. We've all heard the phrase, maybe even used the phrase, took my breath away. That's where she is. That's how awesome this was to her. It took her breath away. She goes into the palace and she sees all of it. She would have been in the temple area. And the temple setting up on Mount Zion, the highest point in Jerusalem. Of course she saw it. You could not see it. And if you'll remember Solomon's temple, overlaid in gold, everything. Highest point, sun sparkling down. She sees the way the servants are. She sees the food on the tables every day. She sees all the things that goes on in and around that city and in and around the nation. And she just, her jaw drops. Verse 6, there's no more breath in her. Pick back up. She said to the king, "It was a true report that I heard in my own land of the acts of your wisdom. However, I did not believe the words until I came and my own eyes had seen it." And we've been in touch with that emotion, right? I've got to see it with my own eyes. Well, that's what she's confessing to him. Remember, she emptied out her heart. She said, none of your secrets here. She says, I'm just going to complain with you. I didn't believe it. I heard it. I heard it again. I heard it from this source. I heard it from that source. I just could not believe that there wasn't some exaggeration. I couldn't believe that wasn't some stretching of the truth. I had to see it with my own eyes. Now, pick back up. Here's the beauty of this. Until I came and my own eyes had seen it, and behold, the half wasn't told to me. Your wisdom and prosperity exceeds the fame that I had heard. Can you picture that? She said, I didn't believe it. I had to see it with my own eyes, and now I have seen it with my own eyes, and I'm going to tell you, what I heard wasn't, that was just the tip of the iceberg. Now think about that. Think about what, she heard these things that she couldn't believe. She's now come there, and what she's realized is, what I heard wasn't even, that was an inch of it. I didn't even hear half of it. Now let that roll around in our head. That's how great. And that's how awe-inspiring this event, this trip, has been to her. She said, I didn't hear the half of this. Everything I heard has been exceeded. Look in verse 2. Let's back up. We skipped this verse. It was intentional. Now let's go pick it up. Go back to verse 2. She came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear spices and much gold, precious stones. You've heard the phrase, it's good to be the king. Well, it's good to be the queen too. The Queen of Sheba did not want for nothing. This is her caravan. This is what she brought with her. And I guess the point to be made is, she would not have been somebody who would have been easily impressed. She's the queen of her own nation. And her own nation has a lot of spices and a lot of gold and a lot of rare jewels, a lot of precious stones. She's the queen of a powerful nation herself. Could you imagine me and you? Could you imagine somebody who lives at the Biltmore Estate, and they come to our house and we start showing them around? Oh, let me show you this picture. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to impress somebody with your house when they live in the Biltmore? They've got Monets, and me and you're going to show them a Kincaid Prince? Good luck with that. She's the queen of a powerful nation. And when she sees what's going on in Israel, didn't hardly know what to say. Awe-inspired. Lost a breath. And she recognized the blessings that Israel had because of having such a wise king. Look in verse 8. Happy, blessed. That's a beatitude. Blessed are your men. Happy are your servants, which stand continually before you and hear your wisdom. Now think about that. She's made this long journey, this long trip. And probably what's going through her mind, she knows she'll probably never be in Solomon's presence again. That's not a trip you're going to be making every month. This was a one-shot deal for her in all likelihood. That's a guess, but it's probably not that she's, and she recognizes, I won't be coming back again. And what she says is, blessed are those men. Blessed are those servants. Blessed are your citizens who get to be around this wisdom every day. How blessed are those who can be around your thoughts and your... What a blessing that is. Look in verse 10. I'm sorry, verse 9. Blessed be the Lord your God, which delights in you, and have set you on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loves Israel forever, and therefore he made you the king to do judgment and justice. We don't really talk like that today. Let's paraphrase that. What he's saying is, or what she is saying, for God to put a king like you over this nation, he must truly love them. God has blessed this nation with a king like you, wisdom beyond compare. Wisdom that exceeds the rumors. And for God to put a king like you over these people, that tells me he must love these people. And that's her visit. And that's what she takes from that. What a king. And you know what would have happened? The Queen of Sheba would have made her way back home. And when she got back there, you know what she would have done? She would have told everybody who came within earshot, let me tell you what I saw in Israel. Let me tell you about the king in Israel. And you know what would have happened when they walked away? They would have said, I don't know about that. And maybe she's exaggerating. Because they couldn't have conceived it either. A king so great with wisdom. What a king is what she would have went home saying. And oh, the stories she would have told about her visit. And that king, compared to ours, can't hardly use them in the same sentence. Regardless of all the praise that Sheba heaped on Solomon, regardless of how true that it was, we serve a greater king than that. And oh, the stories we can tell. We serve the King of Kings, and that's what I want us to remind us of. Let's make some applications about those very same points. I'm just going to rephrase them a little bit, but we're going to look at those very same points, the things that blew the Queen of Sheba's mind about the king she met on that trip. Let's remind ourselves of the king that we serve. James, he couldn't have picked any better songs. Oh, our king. Oh, how we dearly love him. How we ought to. We serve the King of Kings, and what a king that he is. And let's remind ourselves about him. Let's talk about his wisdom and his greatness. Look in Luke chapter 11. Luke 11. Before we even begin really making some applications, let's just look at what the New Testament says about the very king that the Queen of Sheba had visited. In Luke chapter 11, verse 31, we'll come back to this text a little bit later on. But it says the queen of the south, and by the way, that's the same. It's a different reference, but that is the Queen of Sheba. If you have one of those cross references Bible, it's going to send you from verse 31. It'll send you back to either 1 Kings 10 or 2 Chronicles 9. But this is the same event that we just read about. The queen of the south will rise up in judgment with the men of this generation, and she will condemn them. For she came from the utmost parts of the earth. That's the wherever Sheba was, it was a long way from Jerusalem. She went to the moon and back, is how we would say that. She came from the utmost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, a greater than Solomon is here. He takes those who would have been weaned on the law. They knew the story of the Queen of Sheba. She's going to judge you because you know, they would have known what we just reminded ourselves of. They would have known about that trip. They would have known about the praise that she heaped on him. They would have known about how his wisdom inspired her so much. He says, she's going to judge you because there's greater wisdom than that with you, and you won't listen to a word of it. You're ignoring it. You're turning your back on it. We serve a greater king, and that king has even greater wisdom than Solomon had. Look in John chapter 7. John chapter 7. This is to the point in Jesus' ministry, the public works, that he has made some enemies. Not because of his cruelty. Not because of his smart aleck mouth. He has made some enemies because his life has contrasted so much. His teaching has contrasted so much with the traditions of the elders and the Pharisee and Sadducees' traditions and the things that they thought was right. And they're ready to kill him. The Jewish leadership as a whole, ready to kill him. And at this point in John 7, they have actually sent guards. They sent soldiers, basically, to arrest him, bring him back, so that they could start the trial. They're ready to kill him right now. But it's not time for that. The time hasn't come. And when the guards came back empty-handed, they're just beside themselves. We gave you one job. Are you kidding me? Where is he? We just asked you to do one thing. We just asked you to bring him to us. Where is he? And in verse 45, the officers of the chief priests and the Pharisees, they said to him, "Why have you not brought him?" And the officer said, "No man ever spoke like this before." These guards, these officers, these soldiers, whatever title they would have gone by, they must not have been spending a lot of time around Jesus. They'd not been in those multitudes that had been seeing and hearing and taking in. But they did today. Because of where they were sent, because of the mission they had been given, they heard Jesus teach. And they came back with no breath. They came back and the Spirit was gone from them. They came back awe-inspired. And the only thing they could say, "Why didn't you arrest him?" Because we heard something like we had never heard before. We heard teaching in a manner that we have never heard it before. Turn over to chapter 21. The point is, as wise as Solomon was, as great as his message was, Jesus had a greater message. The teachings of Jesus, the wisdom of Jesus, the message of Jesus, greater than any message Solomon ever spouted off. Solomon was talking about trees in Lebanon. Solomon had wisdom of birds and creeping things and all those others. Jesus is talking about the wisdom that can lead to eternal life. In chapter 21, verse 25, here's how John ends his epistle. In his gospel. There are many other things that Jesus did, the which, if they should be written down, every one of them, I suppose that the world itself couldn't contain the books that would be written. John, just in a nutshell, says, we've given you what you need. Through inspiration, you have everything that pertains to life and godliness. You got all you can need to be faithful. But it's not all that he did. You have been given what you need to serve faithfully. But there's more that he did. There's more that he said. And he says, you know, I guess if everything he did was written down, there's not enough libraries to hold the books. There's a song we sing. I'm not going to be able to quote it. But there's a song we sing that something like, if all the oceans were ink and all the something was pens, the oceans would run dry before all the words were written down to explain the greatness of God. Now think back to what Sheba said. I heard some things, but it wasn't the half of it. That's a peanut compared to what John just told us about our king's wisdom. He didn't say, I've only written half of it. What he's saying is, it's not even possible to have written it all. Less than a half was told? You can forget about that. Less than an ocean of ink has been told. We don't know it exhaustively. There's more to know than what could be written. That's breathtaking. And however the Queen of Sheba felt that day, I hope we're starting to get even more of a taste of that. Carnal minds didn't get it. Jesus made the statement back in Luke 11, an application to be made is, here's Jesus teaching with heavenly wisdom that exceeds Solomon's wisdom. And they don't listen to him. They're turning their back on him. They're accusing him of things. Oh, he's a wine bibber. They couldn't accept his wisdom. They accused him of working through the powers of Beelzebub. Carnally minded. And they could not accept it. Couldn't see what they had in front of them. I hope we and you are not that. Let this take our breath away from us. Let this take our spirit away from us. What a king that we serve. Remember that long trip she made? She went to the moon and back. Uttermost parts of the earth. Philip told, when Jesus began to show himself, he said, come and see. Let's talk about that a minute. Look back to Exodus chapter 33. She traveled a long way in order to feast on the wisdom of Solomon. To truly see the king for you and I, that's beyond earthly realms. We can't do that. We can't do what she did. It's not even possible. We'll just show you a couple of examples. I know you're familiar with them. But you remember after Moses comes down from the mount the first time and the idol had been made and was being worshipped, and Moses goes back to God. And of course, as you well know, God will ultimately send the tablets back down again. But in that context, in that interim, Moses just asked, he said, let me see you. I want to see you. Can you imagine how depressed Moses would have been, how discouraged he would have been to come down and seen what he's seen? And I want to see you. In verse 20, God says, you cannot see my face. No man can see me and live. And then he goes on to talk about, in verse 22, he says, it'll come to pass that my glory will pass by you. And in verse 23, he says, I'll take away my hand and you can see my back parts. So what, they had this conversation, Lord, please let me see you. Please let me see you. You can't see me. If you were to see me in the face, you would die. And Moses just said, please. He says, well, here's what we'll do. I'm going to put you in a place. I'm going to put you in a safe place. And I'm going to let my glory pass by. And I'll keep you blocked. And then when it's safe, I'll drop my hand and you can see the back. The back of my glory. All right? Look in chapter 34. Turn over to the next page. Chapter 34, verse 5. It's about to happen. Chapter 34, verse 5, the Lord descended in the cloud, so here he comes. In verse 8, when this has happened, Moses made haste and bowed his head down toward the earth and worshiped him. Seeing the back side of the glory of God put Moses on the ground. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 1. Ezekiel 1. You remember Ezekiel? Not an easy book to study. Not an easy book to read. It's filled with symbols and symbolic language. And eyes can start spinning real quick. And it started almost immediately. We barely get the book started. And all of a sudden there's this incredible scene. Ezekiel in captivity by a river in Babylon among the commoners, I guess you would say. Unlike Daniel living in the temple area, he's out with the common people where me and you would have been. And one day he looks up and he sees this, I don't know how to describe it, like a chariot kind of thing. And there's these beasts and the wheels are spinning, but there's no axles. And so they're kind of spinning all the, I don't really know how to picture it even. But it was an attention getter. And that's what it apparently was designed to be. To just get Ezekiel's attention that he's in the presence of the Lord. And in verse 28, when that scene is over, look at some of the phrases. It says, as the appearance of the bow that in the cloud in the day of rain, so, now here we go, so was the appearance of the brightness around it. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. You talk about extending yourself away from it. The appearance of the likeness of the glory. It wasn't the glory of Him, it was just an appearance of it. It wasn't the glory, it was just a likeness of it. It was just a small dose of it. An appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord, and when I saw it, I fell on my face. Moses sees the back of the glory, and he's biting dust because he's overcome with humility and emotion. Ezekiel sees the appearance of the likeness of the glory through a symbol, and he is on the ground. So me and you can't exactly do what Sheba did. She traveled to him and she got to see him face to face. You see the point? We serve a greater king. We serve a greater Lord. And that ought to be awe-inspiring to us. Do we appreciate the blessing we get from being in the presence of such a king? We read the other day, when two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of you. Do we appreciate that? We're in the presence of the one who Moses got on the ground in front of. Behind, actually. We're in the presence of the one whose likeness of the appearance of his glory put Ezekiel on the ground. That's the Lord that we serve. And how awe-inspiring and how breathtaking that ought to be. Sheba recognized greatness. You and I have got to recognize greatness. Appreciate the king we sing about. Appreciate the king that we're reading about. Appreciate the king that we serve. Because God must really love us. To give us this kind of king, are you kidding? To give us a king like we have, he must love us beyond description. Turn to Romans chapter 5. Romans 5. Galatians 2, there's a song put together with that. Some of the ones who go to camp probably will know the tune to that. I've been crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ who lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, here we go, who loved me and gave himself for me. That's how much we're loved. That's how much the King thinks about us. Do you remember what Sheba had said, the Queen of Sheba? God must really love Israel if he let them have a king like you. How much more so must God love us to give us a king like we have? Romans chapter 5, verse 8. God commended his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. How much love? That's how much love. Look in chapter 8. He didn't just love us. If that doesn't take our breath away, what about this? The same king does this for us. Romans chapter 8, verse 15. You have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear. You have received the spirit of adoption. He didn't just love us. He adopted us. He took us into the family. We know what adoption means. I would be surprised if at somewhere in the family tree, there's not adoption in every one of our families. We know what adoption is. We know exactly what adoption is. That's what happened to us. There's the only begotten Son. And then there is us. The adopted sons. The adopted children. Now think about that. Do we see what that means? The King adopted us. What does that make us? Here's what it makes us. 1 Peter chapter 2. Think about it. The king adopted us. What are you? First Peter chapter 2, verse 9. You're a chosen generation. That's what you are. You're a royal priesthood. That's what you are. A holy nation, peculiar people. That's what we are. Now think about what that phrase was. Royal priesthood. Royalty. We know what royalty is. Kings and queens and princes, royal family. We know what that phrase is. That's what we are. The king adopted us. We are now royalty. You are the son, you are the daughter of a king. And what a blessing that is. Solomon was royal, wasn't he? He wasn't a priesthood. Aaron and the sons of Aaron, they were priests. They weren't royal. There was no mingling of the priesthood and the royal blood. We are both. We are a royal priesthood. We are sons of a king, and we serve in the place of a priest. We don't have anybody intercede for us. We don't have to offer our sacrifices through somewhere else. We don't have to travel to have our spiritual incense burn. We're a royal priesthood. Sheba did not get taken in to Solomon's royal family. Think about that. She showed up, and she just heaped praises on him, and she just gave... you know what didn't happen? You know what we didn't read back in 1 Kings 10? We didn't read Solomon saying, you know, I really appreciate you, and you seem to be really happy here. I'll tell you what, why don't you just become my daughter? Just move here. Just live with me. And all this stuff you can see it every day. That didn't happen. He did not take her in to the royal family. The King of Kings has to every Christian in this room. And if you're not a Christian, understand that's what you can be. Son of a king, daughter of a king, taken in to the family of a breathtaking, wise, great king. Turn back to Luke 11. We'll go back and we'll make one application we skipped over earlier. Let's go back again. Let's end there. Luke 11. And I'll just ask the question, what would you not do for such a king? The Queen of Sheba brought him gold as if he needed it. Remember, during Solomon's kingdom, silver's laying in the street like a rock. He needs more gold, huh? Well, she brought it. She brought precious stones as if they didn't have enough. She brings spices. And apparently, when you look at other contexts, I think the Chronicles account of that. Actually, she brought some spices that Judah did not have. Israel didn't have it. So she brings him presents. What would you not do for a king like we serve? The King of Kings. What would we not do for him? In verse 31, the Queen of the South will rise up in judgment against this generation. Let's make sure we apply that correctly. That does not mean at all. And when that trump sounds, and the Lord descends with his angels, and we stand in judgment, that does not mean that the Queen of Sheba is going to be sitting there with the Lord. What that is saying is that her actions are going to judge us. Because her actions were impressive. She recognized and respected wisdom from above. She recognized and respected greatness. She recognized and respected the fact that God has shown love to his people. And the men that Jesus is talking to, that generation of people, they didn't do any of that. They didn't respect his wisdom. They didn't respect his greatness. They exaggerated. They lied. They killed him. And what he's saying is, her actions are going to judge your actions. Well, just change the generation there. Go from the first generation to the 21st generation. First century to the 21st century. Her judgments will judge us too. If we don't appreciate wisdom from above, if we don't appreciate the greatness of our king, if we don't appreciate the blessing of adoption and take advantage of that, if we don't appreciate the blessings of the royal priesthood and being a part of that, what are we doing? Later on, We just, with the eye of faith, if we just look ahead. Later on, as we sing, when faith becomes sight. It's no longer faith that we're the unseen things. We see it. Imagine when we're there. Later on, when we're with Him forever, around that room. Later on, when we are literally in the presence of the King of Kings. What would you not give for that? What would you not sacrifice for that? Stretches the imagination, and I hope it takes our breath away. And I hope it just makes us want to be better servants because we serve an awesome King. Get your songbooks out. He's my King, and oh, I dearly love Him. We all lift up our voice and sing that. And we read a little bit farther in the book of John. What that King would have said was, what He did say is, if you love Me, you will keep My commandments. We can sing about it all we want. We can sing about how much we love Him. If we're not obedient to Him, it's just lip service, and it's a waste of time. It's a waste of breath. Show our love and show our respect and show our appreciation by service. If you're not on, if you're not one of His servants, you're not one of His children, you haven't been adopted, you haven't entered into the service of the work, you can do that today. Because the King loved you while you were yet a sinner. Sheba was right. God must really love His people. And He showed His love by that death. Take advantage of it. Confess Him and repent. Be baptized. Water's ready. There's Brad's ready. He'll assist you. You can become a child today of the greatest King ever. Take advantage of it while we stand and sing.